Happy 2024! New year, new you, right? Let me guess. You're thinking about joining a new gym, starting a fad diet, buying that Theragun everyone's always yammering on about? I've got a better idea. Listen to my podcast. I'm Samantha Bee, writer, comedian, and host of Choice Words from Lemonada Media. This whole month of January, we're going to help you make better choices in 2024. We'll go beyond superficial hacks and get at the truth of how to lead a more meaningful life. Just search for Choice Words on your podcast player of choice and hit follow so you don't miss an episode. Now that is a good choice.
Are you curious about what drives our buying decisions? Tune in to Add to Cart, where Suchin Pak and Kulap Vilaysack reveal the deeper layers behind our purchases. From the whimsical to the serious, they explore it all. Whether it's a debate over a quirky swimsuit or a deep dive into a new life philosophy, they've got you covered with their hilarious and subversive takes. Don't miss out. Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, dear listener, it's Maria Hinojosa. And now I'm co-host of a new podcast called USA versus Garcia Luna. And I'm here with my other co-host of another podcast in the thick, my dear friend and colleague, Julio Ricardo Varela. Hey, Julio, good to be in the studio with you.
Hey, Maria. So for all you Garcia Luna listeners that have subscribed to this podcast, the reason we're actually checking in is because we wanted to share a special conversation that appeared first on In the Thick, where I got to talk with you, Maria, and Penny Leigh Ramirez, who's also the co-host of USA versus Garcia Luna, all about Genaro Garcia Luna and why the both of you wanted to tell this story and why it matters now.
So I love it when I'm the co-host of a show, but then I get to be a guest.
Yeah.
And that's what happened on this episode of In the Thick. So, yeah, you get to hear from me and Penny Leigh in another kind of style. And it's very conversational, but no tequila involved. Just a great conversation.
So, listen, we wanted to share this sort of behind-the-scenes peek while you're listening to Garcia Luna. Think of this as like an extra, why did we even do this podcast in the first place? So we think this is the perfect episode for you. You'll hear a little bit about how the chorizo got made. That would be sausage for all you non-Spanish speakers. You'll learn a lot. And just like you're laughing during these episodes of Garcia Luna, we laugh a lot in this one as well.
So, dear listener, enjoy this episode of In the Thick as you wait for the next episode of the Garcia Luna podcast to drop. Here we are, Penny Leigh and me on In the Thick. Enjoy.
We like to say in Latin America that real stories in Latin America often are, you know, crazier than fiction. I think this is one of those stories.
Uno, dos, tres.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And I am so energized. I know, dear listener, you're like, what did she drink this morning? I had my regular decaf. Don't get excited. But listen, joining us from Harlem, New York City, the base, the headquarters of Futuro Media, is Penny Leigh Ramirez. She's executive producer of the Futuro Unidad Hinojosa. She leads the special projects and the investigative units of Futuro Media.
Yeah.
Yes, along with me. We work together.
You do.
She's also my co-host for a new Futuro series that we are just about to drop.
Ooh.
And you're like, what's the series? What is it about? Okay. It's on the case against Genaro Garcia Luna, who at one point was Mexico's top public security officer, the big guy.
Yeah.
Hey, Penny Leigh, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Maria, and thank you, Julio. I'm so glad to be back.
Yay.
It's so great to have you because, you know, our relationship with Penny Leigh, it all started right here at In the Thick.
Yeah, Mexico City, when we did the Live Mexico show several years ago.
For those of you who have been longtime fans, that's when Penny Leigh shows up on In the Thick because she's, at that time, was the chief investigative correspondent for Univision in Mexico City. Then fast forward and Penny Leigh now works for us and she leads our investigative unit. So today we're going to talk about what happens when Penny Leigh and I start working together and I realize that we kind of share an obsession about a guy by the name of Genaro García Luna. And coming up on December 9th, we're going to be releasing our new podcast series. It's called USA v. García Luna, i.e. USA versus García Luna. Okay. So we're going to investigate the rise and fall of a high-ranking Mexican government official, the former Secretary of Public Security.
Yeah.
And how he became Mexico's top cop, his role in the drug health crisis right here in the United States, what U.S. agencies knew, and this is a clincher, right? What exactly the U.S. agencies knew about this guy that was like their right-hand man when they were, you know, participating in the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. So, Benny Lay, you've been researching and reporting on García Luna for a decade. And, you know, this is one of the things that you and I have connected deeply about, like this fascination with this guy, Genaro García Luna.
Exactly.
Everybody's going to join us in this. But yeah, our podcast is about to drop. Genaro García Luna is in federal detention right here in Brooklyn. You're both in the same city now.
Yeah, again.
Started in Mexico City. So how are you doing? How do you feel about the fact that our podcast is about to drop?
Well, when you investigate the story for such a long time, it's like the story is kind of embedded to your own life. So we are starting a new season in my relationship with this character that I have been investigating since late 2012. And as you said, when I started investigating him, we both were living in the same place in Mexico City. Soon after that, he moved to Miami, to a $3 million house in Miami.
Wow.
And I started investigating how he got the money for that. And now we live in the same city again, but in a different situation because I live and work in Harlem for Futuro Media. And he is in Brooklyn in a detention center waiting for a trial. And it's going to be a major trial. It's the most important trial after El Chapo Guzman trial, former leader of the Sinaloa cartel, that happened here in New York in 2018. Right now, this other trial is about to start, and the podcast is a way to tell the people why this upcoming trial matters and why they should know about this guy.
Maria, when Penny joined Futuro, right, you texted me a couple of days after Penny joined and was like, this story, we got to do this story. And I was like, what are you talking about? So how are you feeling? Because I was like, okay, because you were a little bit obsessed with this. So how are you feeling?
All right. So here's the thing. If you know my journalism, for those longtime followers, you know that I actually did not report on anything that had to do with El Chapo because I was like, I'm not, I don't need to do that reporting. Yeah. There's enough people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I ended up in the Dominican Republic and I was watching Netflix in Latin America and I ended up watching, kind of like, because there's nothing else to watch, the television version, the dramatic version of El Chapo for Netflix. It's a dramatization, but there's this guy that is fascinating in the drama, just fascinating.
Conrado
right?
Sol. Okay.
And in the TV show, he's called Conrado Sol.
Okay.
Get it? His name is García Luna in real life. Sol and Luna. Get it? So
yeah, I got it.
I'm like, who is this guy? Like, he's like the guy that nobody knows about who is working on behalf of the Mexican government, running all the prisons, all the police, everybody.
Okay.
But he works for El Chapo inside the government. And guess who else loves him? The DEA, the U.S. government. They love this guy. He turned out allegedly to be corrupt.
Wow.
Like with a big capital C. That's why he's in federal detention in Brooklyn. But you're like, okay, well, so another person involved in drug war, drug traffic, you know. Like, let me just tell you one thing about this dude and why I'm like, this is why we had to do this podcast.
Okay.
And why we had to have a bottle of tequila with us when we recorded
just
it.
Just a disclosure, there's no tequila happening during this In the Thick conversation.
No tequila happening right now, no.
All right.
But Penny Lay and I did because it's like true crime meets telenovela.
Right.
This guy was like a top cop. What was his basement, his secret basement dedicated to? Donna Summer and disco music. Are you intrigued?
I'm in.
Now you know why I'm obsessed with Genaro García Luna.
You had me at Donna Summer.
Exactly. That's it. So now you know why I'm obsessed. And also, it's great journalism. And Benny Lay has really done a phenomenal job of tracking this guy for over a decade.
Yes.
And she's a star journalist. How could we not kind of showcase her reporting?
Yeah.
He is right here in New York City because this is where he will be put on trial.
Right. And Penny Lay, you mentioned, and Maria mentioned, you have been looking into García Luna, Mexico's top public security official from 2006 to 2012 during the administration of President Felipe Calderón. Let's just play a clip from the podcast to listen to how you describe García Luna's climb to power.
So what's really striking about García Luna is that he came from a very unremarkable background. But he was able to rise to power very, very quickly. García Luna is now in his 50s. He was born in Mexico City in 1968. And in the late 80s, when he was 21 years old, he entered the CISEN. The CISEN is the Center for Investigation and National Security, which is the equivalent to the CIA in Mexico. He started as a security agent, which means basically a low-ranking spy. But from there, in just about a decade, in the year 2000, the guy becomes the head of the Federal Investigative Agency, so the equivalent to the director of the FBI. And just 6 years after that, he was appointed Secretary of Public Security by then-President Felipe Calderón. This was the highest point of his career.
Right. This is the part I love. When you said true crime meets telenovela, and then 2019, right, during the very much publicized trial of Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, the leader of the Sinaloa cartel, one of the witnesses just goes, hey, García Luna, you know, mentions his name, accuses García Luna of receiving millions of dollars in bribes from the cartel in exchange for help smuggling drugs into the United States. And this is during the time that García Luna was working with the U.S. to fight the quote-unquote war on drugs. So García Luna relocated to the United States after his term was up. You mentioned Miami. And he was also arrested and is now awaiting trial. So in 2009, he's like, all right, now it's your turn. So in the first episode, you mentioned that part of why you wanted to cover this is because his defense is expecting and I mean, I can understand the defense and hoping that the U.S. media will just look away. Penny Lay, let me ask you first, and then Maria can jump in. Framing the story that way, why is it so important to tell this in an audio format and to tell it now?
Well, the thing is that when Maria told me that you were choosing me for leading the investigative unit, we start talking and talking about stories, and I'm fascinated with the story. So I was like truly like getting her into all the knowledge I have about this guy in 10 years. And then Maria was like, we should do a podcast. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure, because maybe we should do something else more about the U.S. And Maria was like, but this is a deeply American story. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure. But Maria was like, she saw it like so clear. And then the lawyer says that García Luna is virtually unknown in the United States, that nobody here is going to pay attention to this trial. So I remember I came back to the office and I told Maria, we're going to make this guy famous. You are going to be famous now, dude. And after that, we have been...
I love that. Penny Lay's like, García Luna, we're going to make you famous in the United States of America.
Yeah, because, you know, if you see... Until now, it's been a lot of attention in the Mexican press, but nobody has told the way we are telling now why this is an American story. And it is because there is a lot of money, more than $3 billion, that went from the U.S. to Mexico to fight this quote-unquote war on drugs. And this guy, Genaro García Luna, was managing a lot of that money. And he spent the money, and you will discover this in the podcast, in a lot of crazy things, like creating a TV series for, you know, just portraying himself, and a lot of crazy stuff that you will discover. And that's why Maria and I decided that we needed a bottle of tequila to, you know, go through all of that.
Kind of need one for this one.
Oyeme, Julio, did you hear what Penny Lay just said? So
yeah, I did.
This guy, top cop, right?
Yeah.
Is getting millions of dollars from the United States to fight the war on drugs. And what does he do?
Produces a show.
He says, you know what? He's like, let me create my own television CSI, series. Law and Order.
It's like, let me create a show.
That's what he does with U.S. taxpayer money. Now, why do I think this story is important to tell? Because Benilei is right. This is an American story. One of the highest ranking Mexican government officials to ever be indicted in the United States. And people are like, well, you know, Mexican government officials, they're corrupt. And it's like, hold on a second. And it goes back actually to my intense understanding of the opposite of American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
I grew up when Richard Nixon had to resign because he was the most corrupt president in modern American history. And so corruption for me in the United States was like, no, it happens here. It doesn't just happen in Mexico. It happens right here. And so imagine my surprise when I'm, you know, learning about García Luna. And it's like, but it's not just García Luna in Mexico. He was able to do all of this, Julio,
yeah,
because he was blessed by this relationship with the United States. He was like the anointed golden boy of the DEA and the CIA. And so he could do no wrong.
Yeah.
That's why it's important to tell this story because, yeah, ultimately we are talking about this so-called war on drugs. And you know who leads that war on drugs is the DEA.
Yeah.
And how often do you hear stories about high-level corruption in the DEA?
Yeah, they don't want the attention.
Exacto. So that's why it's like you're going to learn about this guy who loves Donna Summer, but also what this has to do with your tax dollars. It's funny. We can laugh about it. But in the end, it's loss of millions upon millions of dollars,
yeah,
of our tax dollars that are being spent to, you know, fight in this so-called war on drugs. And the level of corruption, bro, on both sides of the border.
Yeah.
That's what we really want to uncover.
Yeah, I'm going to do a reveal. I binged on García Luna. I think I'm the only person outside of the production team. So can I just put on my creative editorial hat for a second?
Yeah.
I was really intrigued by the format of having the two of you together having this conversation. Because I have listened to quote unquote cartel podcasts in the past where they're very dramatic. You know, it's like the El Chapo trial.
Right.
You know, it's like boom, boom, boom.
Scary Mexicans.
Exactly. Penny's Mexican, Cuban. Maria born in Mexico, Mexicana. You make this conscious choice as a team to have two journalists talk about this story. And I'm just really curious as to why that choice was made. Because I actually think there's so much, you know, true crime is just overexposed. The cartel stories, I'm sick and tired of them. You know what I mean?
And you're exactly right. People are like, I'm sick and tired of narco journalism, of all this kind of like, I'm sick and tired of it. And it's like, we get it. That's part of the desensitizing, right? And everybody's just like, oh, the war on drugs, it's always going to be here. And we're saying, no, doesn't have to be this way. And what up with this deep corruption that is going on? I mean, Benilei, don't you feel that way that like you reported this story in Mexico for so long?
Yeah.
Because García Luna created this image of himself as really untouchable. In fact, that's the name of one of our episodes.
Yeah.
And he believed that he was untouchable because of his proximity to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And people in Mexico, including the president, were like, well, no, García Luna, he's clean because he works with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to Benilei describe what García Luna does after that moment, which is when now his name is brought up in the trial for El Chapo.
Yeah. It's like, oh,
like
shit.
García Luna's like, do-de-do-de-do. I'm just living here in Florida. No. La-di-da-di-da. And then it's like, uh-oh.
Like, fuck!
You're yeah. All right, let's listen to what Benilei tells us in the podcast.
He went back to Mexico and he gave a bunch of interviews.
It's totally absurd. It's mentira. It's una infamia. Y lo ha sido señalado, inclusive.
Saying that, oh, that's absurd. That's a lie. I'm going to sue this person because he said that about me. And then he started a campaign in Twitter posting different photos with captions. And I want to show you some of those tweets, Maria.
So the first tweet is 11 de enero 2019, 11th of January of 2019.
So 2 months after he was mentioned at the trial.
It's just recognition from the DEA in the United States. And then he has like a picture of like a very fuzzy photograph of some kind of official U.S. DEA badge.
Here is a second tweet, and it also includes a photo of an award.
It says, Genaro García Luna, in recognition of your friendship, collaboration, and support during your tenure as the Security of Public Safety, David Petraeus, Director, Central Intelligence Agency, April 2012.
So according to the accusation, he was helping El Chapo since 2001. So more than 10 years after that, in 2012, the CIA gave him a recognition for his service and, you know, his help. So he keeps tweeting like this for months.
So this is April 2019. So literally just posting photographs of him now with Hillary Clinton, i.e. I have friends in high places.
I mean,
it's crazy, right? I mean, he has these rooms where he has all of these photographs and all of the like little mementos and the little diplomas and recognitions, right? Because it turns out when he's arrested in December of 2019 in Texas, in fact, federal agents find a room with all of this memorabilia of him and his ties to powerful people in the United States, all over the walls in one of the rooms in his house in Texas. Óyeme, Penilei, I mean, García Luna really was able to hide behind these connections to the United States. And it's kind of astonishing that Mexico would just be like, he's been vetted by the United States, therefore he's okay.
I think that's the only thing where the lawyer of García Luna and me, we agree, is that, the relation of García Luna with the United States was really important to him. It was really important. By the way, some of those frames that he had, he was all over the place. So every time he moved to a house, and I was tracing him for 10 years, and I was tracing him because every time that he was living somewhere, and then the house was put in sale, and they do a YouTube video with the house, I was just searching for the frames. Oh, and if I found the frames, oh, he's living in this house. So it is this person obsessed with his own image, but at the same time, is this person using his proximity to the United States to gain the confidence of, you know, the people working with him or working for him or responding to the Mexican Congress every time he was called to, you know, respond for anything wrong that he was doing or the people working for him were doing. And the fact that right now the lawyer is saying, no, he was just a retired Mexican officer. He was only in relationship with this diplomat.
Okay. He's being a good lawyer defending that, but I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, dude. All right. Sorry, Penny. Continue.
And that's why, responding to your other question, Julio, that's why we decided to laugh in the podcast.
You have to.
It is important to disclose here that we had a lot of internal debate in the team because it is a pretty serious podcast. It is a pretty serious issue that we are discussing here. We know that there are victims of this quote-unquote war on drugs, and we talk about them also in the podcast, and we give them their moment also to respond to the allegations against him and how this affects them. But at the same time, it's just a crazy story. And when you start telling the story, people start laughing like naturally, like you now, Julio, and the people listening to the podcast. And Maria, and so we love the format that we have Maria learning more about the story as I am explaining to her all the researching that I have been doing. And Maria is kind of discovering the story with the listener.
Exactly.
I love the fact that some of members of our team, when they listen to the first draft of one of the episodes, they were laughing in the same moment when Maria was actually laughing during the recording.
Right.
So it is a true crime story, but it is told from a different way, from a unique perspective. I think that's why it's innovative. We like to say in Latin America that we have stories that, you know, real stories in Latin America often are, you know, crazier than fiction. And I think this is one of those stories.
If you like this show, then you should definitely check out In the Blood, hosted by actor Ben McKenzie. The chilling story centers around Ronald Trimboli, a man convicted of a Texas triple murder he insists he did not commit. He had an alibi, no history of violence, and it seemed almost impossible to imagine the crime could have been committed by just one man. But Ronald Trimboli's DNA test, performed in the infancy of DNA testing in the 1980s, was a match. Is it possible he was innocent of the Texas triple murder he was convicted of? In the Blood presents all of the evidence, including evidence jurors were not privy to, and asks you, the audience, for your verdict. The crime took place in Texas in 1985, but it echoed across decades through multiple trials, a DNA retest, and the discovery of new evidence all the way to modern times. Was Ronald Trimboli a terrifying murderer of three teenagers, or the victim of an incredible string of bad luck and his own tendency to talk himself into trouble? Listen to In the Blood to explore the evidence and decide for yourself. And don't miss the trailer at the end of this episode. You won't want to miss a single detail. Check out In the Blood wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Also, the thing is, Julio, is that, as you know, Futuro Media is a very... There's a lot of women in power here.
Yeah.
Basically, a lot
Julio
of women.
Julio knows that.
As one of the few dudes, that's what makes this place so amazing. So continue, Maria.
Because we... understand, I don't know, kind of a connection with our humanity as well. And so that's why I did not want to do another narco podcast.
Yeah, I get it.
Ultimately, what we're trying to do, Julio, is really talk to American citizens and residents, because how long are you going to stand for a false war?
Right.
For a war that is corrupt. Brings me no joy to say this, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, what we uncover, right, in terms of the deep corruption in the DEA. But we need to know about this, because we cannot just be like, no, everything's taken care of. Everything's okay. We got the war on drugs and they're fighting it. No. In many ways, I'm sorry, I'm going to say a Mexican saying.
Go.
Nos están viendo la cara. Do you know that saying in Puerto Rico, nos están viendo la cara?
No. So please, please explain it
you
to
don't?
Me.
You don't?
How you say that in English? They are making fun of us?
Do they say that in Cuba, Penila?
No. The way we say in Cuba, I
see,
can say
so
it.
See, so I have a fellow Caribbean.
What is it? What is it?
Go.
No, I don't know exactly how we say
Porque
that.
Porque en México te están viendo la cara de pendejo,
exacto,
basically.
Pero en Cuba...
Te están viendo la cara de pendejo.
No me tomen de pendejo.
No me tomen de pendejo. Exactly. It's like they're taking us for a ride.
Yeah, yeah.
They're,
exactly.
The whole conversation fooled. Of the war on drugs and all of this, and we're fighting this and all your...
But it's all connected to migration.
Exacto, Julio. Yeah.
Basically, Julio, we are challenging the good cops, the people that are always played like good cops. And that's also why we decided to produce a podcast before for the trial, because we cannot know what kind of trial is going to be. You know, we saw,
yeah.
I covered for Univision El Chapo's trial. It's more telenovela than true crime, the trial, because it is like,
yeah.
Oh, they met in the carretera. How you say that?
In the road.
In the road.
The highway, yeah.
They met in the highway and they had this super secret encounter and they talk about it. The briefcases with the money and all of that, maybe it's going to be part of the trial, but not the rest of the things that we are discussing in the podcast, which is who is this guy? How this guy got to get the power, how he gained the confidence of the
United States
and the Mexican government. And we talk about chisme as well. We won't disclose that because we want you to...
Yeah, no, listen to the damn podcast, subscribe. No, don't reveal too much.
Yeah, a lot of details about how this guy not just raised to power really quickly, but maintained power for more than a decade in a super complicated place like Mexico.
Yeah.
And I don't think... we will have enough time to explain that during the trial because there is going to be a lot of material that we are going to cover, of course. We say that also in the podcast, but it's related to, you know, the charges and the different moments when the cocaine was coming to the United States, etc. But in the two episodes that we are releasing this Friday, the second one is called The Mexican Hoover.
He wanted to be J. Edgar Hoover.
And Julio? This guy was obsessed
with... which is complicated itself. You know.
Exactly. That's what Maria said.
With all the FBI conversations we've done on In the Thick,
exactly.
Explains a lot. But listen, Maria, you touch on something that's really hit home with me when you talk about the quote-unquote war on drugs, because it started under former President Nixon, which turned this public health problem into this national security issue that has led to everything that's connected with migration and commerce, you know, everything, right? You know, the chaotic border, all that stuff.
Exactly.
You know, Maria, you and Penny Lay describe this evolution and its impact in the podcast series. So let's take a listen. Cue it up.
So this is important, dear listener, because if we go back to Nixon, this is when the war on drugs in the U.S. is actually declared officially. It's after the Cold War and Vietnam. You know, the U.S. was looking for a new war. The Nixon administration was really trashed at that point. So they needed something, a local war. And they turned a public health problem, right, into a national security problem. And it becomes this kind of war talk, right? The war on drugs.
Exactly. And after they created this war on drugs here in the U.S., they exported that model into Colombia first with the Plan Colombia, the Colombian plan, and then to other Latin American countries. And then finally, they exported the same system into Mexico. And it became an international business because there were a lot of companies and a lot of people selling things around this war.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about this so many times on In the Thick, Maria and I, with our guests, about these dangers of over-militarizing issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I just said, from the response to migrants at the border to employing police to address mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is all connected. It feels like the same thing happened in trying to address the drug crisis. And it's so obvious that it's like, where's the outrage? But this is interesting, right? Here's Garcia Luna, right, saying, oh, I got U.S. protection. And then when a push comes to shove, the U.S. goes like, oh, no, you don't, motherfucker. Like, we are going to arrest you. And you're like, what? Right? So this notion of U.S. policy, cooperate with us. We have you. And they still screw people over. And the role that the U.S. played in making the drug crisis worse. Here's the thing, Maria. You and I talk about this. It's like, it's never our problem as Americans. It's never, no, God forbid,
correct,
that Americans are playing a big role in the drug crisis. No, no, no. It's all about the cartels and all about the violence and all about it coming from the global south. It's not our problem.
So I would not have watched Narcos, the TV show, had it not been for the fact that everybody else was watching it. And I felt like I needed to be in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But if you watch that TV show,
yeah,
who are the heroes? Who saves the day? It's the U.S. DEA.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones who are, like, the clean guys. They're the ones who...
The good cops.
The good cops, exacto. And I'm tired of that, Julio.
Yeah.
What we need to understand is that, and we're just talking about the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, yes, that Garcia Luna allegedly took and just, like, did whatever the heck he wanted to. But ultimately, where do we go from here? Some of the most basic issues, like, for example, migration. The U.S.-Mexico border. How do we deal with that? How do we deal with the fact that you have this so-called war on drugs since the 1960s? Y nada pasa. More people have died than less.
And the criminalization of even like marijuana being like the Mexican drug. You know, this
exactly.
is not just, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is a.
And where are we now?
Decades and decades, exactly.
And we talk about marijuana and trauma also in the series.
We
and
do.
We talk about how these people are, you know, at the end, they're filling a market that's demand.
Demand. Yeah,
yeah, we did. In fact, we talked about my own PTSD and marijuana and how it helped me. But that's a very different thing than what Garcia Luna was involved with, because what that was about was taking advantage of everyone and making yourself super rich. Now, in 2006, in Mexico, then President Felipe Calderón, he too declares this war on drugs in Mexico, following the U.S. model, right? Penny Lay, you know, you write a whole book about this, and the title of that book is The Millionaires of This Quote-Unquote War. You specifically focus on this idea of how patriotic the discourse of this war was, you know, in Mexico. But actually what's happening is a lot of people are getting rich. It's a lot of money, a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you
carry
that thread into this series that we did about Garcia Luna. And like you said earlier, the U.S. has sent Mexico more than $3 billion of our taxpayer dollars to stop drugs from coming into the United States. And yet we found that Almost a million people, 900,000, have died of drug overdoses in the United States since 1999.
Wow.
Benny Lay, can you expand on how families have benefited from this war? That's exactly what you're like. Hay millonarios de la guerra. There are millionaires from this war. Hmm. Who else are the millionaires and how have they benefited while lives have been lost?
Hmm. Well, we discuss in the series how there's a lot of reporting that have been doing, you know, Mexican journalists and also American journalists based in Mexico and in other parts of Latin America about all the losers of the war. So all the families that have been, you know, losing loved ones or have people that are still missing and they're looking for them, they're looking for justice. But a few reporting has been done about who is winning with the war, with this so-called war on drugs. And we say in the podcast that there are illegal winners, but also legal winners. So, because if you have $3 billion from U.S. taxpayers going to Mexico, let's take the example of Mexico, you have a lot of government contracts and you have a lot of people winning those contracts and you have a lot of equipment flowing into the country and you have a lot of money into police forces and into super sophisticated new places for the police. We have one of them because, again, García Luna was obsessed with CSI, so he created a super intelligence center. But you have all the money to do that.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of people making a lot of money with that. And this is why one of our episodes is in Miami, because a lot of that money actually came back to the U.S. And that's another U.S. angle to the story, because most of that money that was spent in quote-unquote the war was actually spent in, you know, millions of dollars in houses, in apartments and cars and planes and collection of Patek Philippe watches in Miami.
I learned what that is, Julio. Do you know about Patek Philippe?
No.
So who knew? Penny Lay, obviously, she knew. And my son knew, too. They were like,
oh, well, of course, Raul knows.
Patek Philippe watches. So these are watches that go for like $500,000, bro.
Yeah.
He had like a collection, right?
A collection of those, the partners. And Maria was like, no, Rolex is the big one. I said, no.
Rolex is like nothing.
No, Rolex is like TJ Maxx of watches.
Oyeme, Penny Lay, before we go, I just want to, because I want to address this for you, dear listener, when you listen to García Luna.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So look, Benny Lay is new to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We do very serious stuff, but we do like to laugh. And so, dear listener, I know, Julio, you were a little surprised when I ended up poking fun at Benny Lay and some English words.
Like,
yeah, I was going to say, I was like, you know, I was listening to the whole thing and I was like, I'm giving you the opportunity, the power of the mic, the In the Thick mic, Futuro Media founder, before the podcast goes out and then you start getting all the tweets. Because I think that the issue of humor is something that it's a choice. It's a conscious choice editorially.
Yeah, it is.
So Mariana Hossa, like,
yeah,
you want to address that?
Well, we decided that there needed to be levity, that sometimes this is how we as journalists deal with these things. And also, what I love about Benny Lay is that she's a young journalist who's prepared to take on any challenge. And she's co-anchoring a podcast in English when English is not her first language. And so, yeah, like I make mistakes in Spanish.
Yeah, you did.
So she makes a few mistakes in English. Like my favorite one, you know which one it is.
Which one?
Oh, I want to hear this one.
Look, the thing is that we want to normalize accents in audio, in radio, in every part of our lives. So we're very happy that you're here with us, Benny Lay. But also, you know, I'm a jokester, so don't be upset if I poke a little fun at your English, okay? I'm sorry.
Don't worry. I will make fun of your Spanish.
Touché.
Well, Maria, if we agree, then we can just finish this and focus on the subject.
Wait, we're gonna do what?
Yeah, focus on the series.
We're going to focus on our series, okay?
Now I know how to say focus, and I need to say it super slow, focus, because if I don't say that, I just keep saying focus, and Maria keeps laughing.
You mean you say focus? Okay.
Maria's like in fifth grade again. You said focus! Like, that's basically what
I know, right? My favorite one is when Benny Lay is like, you know, and then he had a yacht, and I was like, a who? A yacht, which I just love you, Benny Lay. It's a yacht, okay? For those of you who don't know, it's a yacht. But thank you for Benny Lay for being such a good sport.
I do want to acknowledge that, Benny Lay, that feeling of like, oh shit, here I am. I'm doing a 5-episode podcast series in English after I just got hired. You were fantastic.
Oh.
Your tracking, as they say in the business.
Perfect.
Was spot on. And your authenticity and your love and your passion for this story shows in the recording.
Oh.
And I just want to tell you that.
Thank you.
You can tell Maria to focus. focus off.
But at the same time, Julio, I don't trust people that are unable to laugh about themselves.
Oh, believe
me.
You're definitely in the right group if it's Futuro Media.
But not only that, Julio, we are going to do a version in Spanish, and Penny Day is going to get back at me. She's going to be laughing at my Spanish all the way.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. Be like, la problema. It's el problema, Maria. Let's move to our final segment, which we call La Última y Nos Vamos, the last one before you go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to ask the question because I have to ask the question of both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have all mentioned, but both of you have mentioned, this is not an easy story to cover.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about the devastating loss of human life to drugs. Penny Lay, you've also talked about how it's been so dangerous to cover this topic in Mexico, how some journalists have had to leave Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You have both talked about how important levity was. You know, you got to laugh a little bit. But outside of work, given that the series is going to be out this Friday, the first two episodes, how do you balance your deeply serious and important reporting with maintaining some hope and joy? So Penny Lay, I know you've had a couple of intense weeks. You know, we've worked closely together. And I kind of said, I hope you find time to find the joy and the hope. And, you know, we're nearing the end of the year. So what are you doing to kind of balance that?
I read a column that Maria wrote a couple of weeks ago about her morning routine.
Mm.
And I also have my morning routine that have saved me, actually. So I dance every morning.
Wow.
So I wake up, I do my coffee, I'm Cuban, so of course I have short espresso to start the day, and then I meditate, and then I dance like crazy, dancing myself, all by myself, reggaeton for half an hour, and get everything out, and then I'm ready for, you know, taking down any power people that I need to take down during the day.
Okay.
And I'm leading a team along with Maria that is mostly female. And I want to say it out loud, leading a team of women, powerful and brilliant women, like we are in our team in Futuro Investigates, means that we talk a lot about everything that we do. We have these long discussions about everything because we want to lead in a different way. And that sometimes takes a lot of energy too. But we laugh a lot. We laugh a lot and we eat popcorn. And during the podcast, we ate a lot of chocolates and popcorn and coffee and tequila, of course. So we're now kind of fat but happy, you know?
Kind of fat but happy.
Okay. All right, Maria.
You know, when you ask me like how I'm maintaining joy and hope right now, Julio, it's actually I made a trip to Chicago just this weekend.
Yeah.
I was tired. I just flew back from Rome. You know, there's a lot going on. I flew to go see and spend the day with my grandniece. It's my sister's daughter had a baby. And the baby is Zoe Elena.
I love that name.
She's 2 months old. And so what did I do all day Saturday? Threw back and carried a baby, put the baby to sleep, watched the baby, looked at the baby, held the baby, smiled with the baby, waited for our hot dogs to be delivered and they didn't come, held the baby some more.
It's like they were legit Chicago dogs, right?
Yeah, they were. But anyway, that was another story. There I was at 11 o'clock eating a Chicago-style hot dog. Yeah, it was
My God.
But you know what?
Yeah.
So in many ways, I'm going to dedicate this show and all of my work this year to the new baby in my life, Zoe Elena.
I love it.
All of this one is for you, mamita.
All right.
Because we want you to grow up hyper-aware, conscious, and a fighter for democracy and justice. Yo, yo, yo. No pressure.
Stay on brand. All right. So you wanna bring it home?
Absolutely. Penny Lay Ramirez, executive producer of Futuro Unidad Hinojosa and our investigative and special projects unit. Thank you so much for being my co-anchor with USA versus Garcia Luna. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick.
Thank you for the invitation. It all started here in the Thick.
It did.
Oh my God, it all started here and in the Thick.
I know.
It's beautiful. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, remember to go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really helps. Also, to subscribe to Garcia Luna.
Right now, the trailer's out.
Right now, the trailer's out. Go, go, go.
All podcast platforms. Click, support us.
Yes, which is where you can also listen to In the Thick. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. And if you're really into social media, find us at Futuro Investigates.
That's right.
We're trying to get new followers. Yeah. So find us on Twitter and on Instagram and on TikTok and everywhere else. All of it. Yeah. So In the Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harsha Nahata, Oscar Fernandez, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Daniela Tello Garzon. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, Gabriela Baez, and JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and CZK Records. Dear listener, go listen to USA versus Garcia Luna. Subscribe right now. Remember, no te vayas. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Peace out, y'all.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.
Lemonada.
Last Day from Lemonada Media explores the moments that change us. Those times where you look back and say, whoa, one day I was myself and the next I wasn't. I'm Stephanie Whittles-Wax, and I have seen time and time again how sharing these stories can change lives. So, do you have a moment in your life that changed you fundamentally and forever? What happened? How did you move through it? And how did you eventually start again? If you'd like to share your story, go to bit.ly/lastdaystories, bit.ly/lastdaystories. We can't wait to hear from you.
Feeling decision fatigue about what to make for dinner? We get it. I'm Jane Black.
And I'm Liz Dunn. We're veteran food journalists, and as parents ourselves, we know how hard it can be to feed your family.
That's why we created Pressure Cooker, a podcast that offers practical strategies for navigating the marketing madness and cultural expectations around mealtime.
Each week, we'll check in with the experts. From social media diet trends to baby-led weaning and AI meal planning, we have all your food-related questions covered.
Listen to Pressure Cooker wherever you get your podcasts.